This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good, usually. But today, something a little different.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And I am Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And we are joined once again here in the cave of bad ideas.
We're working on the volcano.
Yeah. You know, getting magma to flow in all the right directions, it's
hurting cats.
I know.
That are on fire.
We are joined once again by our awesome guest, Bob Raimonda. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Happy to be here.
Excellent. Thank you for being back and for letting us delve into your brain and your wisdom and your podcasting
volcano
experience. Yes.
Yes, my volcano specifically.
So let's talk a little bit more about Windfall. We talked in our previous episode about what it was about. What was the genesis of it? Did you start with the planet? Did you start with the childlike empress? Did you
the
start
very
with
small and constrained cast that it has?
Oh god, it's so goddamn big. So it actually started, we talked a little bit about this off mic earlier, but I have for the past 5 years been running a literary magazine called Breadcrumbs. The way Breadcrumbs works is every piece we publish is inspired by a phrase, object, or image in one of the preceding pieces, mm-hmm, and links backwards. So when that happened, when I was making that magazine, I hadn't written in 3 years. I had told myself after graduating undergrad, I could take a year. That turned into three really fast, and I needed a reason to start writing again. Mm-hmm. I knew if I just tried to do like a personal blog, I would give up on it and not give a shit about it very, very quickly. And I knew a lot of my friends from undergrad were feeling the same sort of feelings. You know, we were all like trying to work our first jobs and just feeling really creatively deplete. So I started writing these little microfictions, and I basically just had a Google document, and I was emailing everyone I knew that wrote or did illustrations or photography and tried to get them to contribute. So in the beginning, it was all just me writing pieces inspired by myself. And one of the images that kept sticking out for me was this castle floating in the clouds. And it was sort of like, why is this castle floating in the clouds? What's it doing there?
Who put it there?
Exactly. So Windfall, as it were, started through a series of these short vignettes that I wrote for Breadcrumbs over the first year. So the first one is Queen Wanda and her robot assistant Tin Man, but instead of her as the childlike god queen that she is, a woman in her 30s, it's her as like a 7-year-old running around misbehaving with only a robot butler to tend for her.
Right.
And then the second piece I wrote was about Argus, who's one of our main characters, who is this poor kid that's in this very upper class floating markets and trying to track down this woman who's lost something in his aunt's bar.
Okay.
And so these are like the first sort of pieces that started to come out, and I kept just going back to this world. Meanwhile, for Breadcrumbs, every 25 pieces, we had started working in small individual audio fiction pieces. I had gotten really obsessed with Welcome to Night Vale and Ars Paradoxica, and my brother is an engineer and a composer and really wanted to figure out ways for us to collaborate again. So we started doing that. Josh Rubino was the first person that we ever worked with.
What a man.
And he did so many of those little individual pieces for us. And after we had done 7 or 8 standalone pieces, you know, we were really trying to figure out, like, what is the idea for our serialized show? Yeah. And I just, we couldn't land on something that we all liked. And driving to a concert one day, my brother and I are talking about it, and my girlfriend's with us in the back seat, and she just says, why not Argus? And that really just kind of entirely made it click for me. And I spent like 6 months, I did a solo draft of the whole first season. Wow. And then I started contacting just like beta readers to help me fix it. And that's when my writing partner from the first season, Christy Donato, and co-creator, joined on. And the what becomes the main climax of the season finale was inspired by a piece that she had written early on for Breadcrumbs and
awesome.
Performed. So bringing her in just really made sense.
Now, you just said a phrase that covers so much manner of sin. You sort of very casually said, and then I went and I wrote the first season.
Yeah.
What does that look like? Kind of, you know, do you sort of begin episode one, write that and see where it takes you? Did you kind of map out the tent poles of the story? How do you go about breaking a season?
So I had taken earlier in the year a TV writing class at Gotham Writers Workshop. Mm-hmm. And I had just learned a lot about like outlining through slug lines. So not doing these big detailed outlines,
sure.
but instead just figuring out, all right, what are my A, B, and C plots that we want in each uh-huh. episode? I knew I wanted 10, just because I really like the number 5 and, you know, multiples of 5. And so I just figured, you know, 30 slug lines of like, what's the main thrust of the season? And that's all I had. I had 30 sentences and I just wrote. I wrote for 6 months, and what it looked like after that 6 months and what it looked like after the next like year and a half-ish of editing it uh-huh. are two completely different beasts.
Of course.
Sure.
So I'm very much a like outline as minimally as possible.
Interesting.
Throw everything I've got at the page and then throw most of that out uh-huh. afterwards.
So talk to me about your writer's room and how did it go from you to... It sounds like you have sort of...
There's 3 of us now.
Okay.
Yep. So...
What was that transition like?
So in our first season, you know, as I said, I brought Christy on just to read. And then, you know, it really became very apparent that she had a lot to bring to the table mm-hmm. and that we had really this like massive undertaking in front of us. We had tons of, you know, main characters that we were trying to weave throughout. And we really decided that the way that was going to make most sense for us to move forward was go week by week, episode by episode.
No, you're
okay.
good.
Go week by week, episode by episode. And we broke it out by scenes, by characters. So she really owned certain plot lines and I owned others.
Oh, fascinating.
And that's how we did like our second and third drafts. By the time we got to the fourth and fifth, we were both just taking a week on an episode and saying like, all right, we just need to punch this up. And we were both editing the entire thing.
Wow.
So even though we knew like I owned the characters Argus and Helena and she uh-huh. owned the characters Cass and Kendall and Pav, those characters still braid in and out with each other. So it's
totally.
Not at all that we didn't write for everyone or that, you know, when you look at the finished script, I don't know who wrote what anymore because we both worked on it so much.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like it. That's why I really consider her like a co-creator on the project. Like, sure, it came from characters that I had been writing about for a long time, but they would not be the characters that they are without everything that she brought to the table.
Yeah.
For our second season, we, as the time came for us to start getting into drafting, or redrafting, I sat down, I wrote the whole thing by myself. During post-production of our first season, again, we threw most of that out. But by the time it was time to sit down and start trying to mold it into something, we were in production of a show that we were pitching to a network that didn't end up going. It was a nonfiction show with, it was like a history show, and Christy has a creative writing and history double major from SUNY
oh, wow.
Purchase, where we went to school together. And so it really, even though the people from the network had approached me, it made more sense for it to be a project that she led, because it's just, she's got more of a mind for that. So I also knew that I still didn't want to be writing alone, because it's such a massive beast that it makes so much more sense to be bouncing ideas off each other. So we actually brought in Jess Clark, who plays Queen Wanda. Her and Christy had worked on several projects together in the past. That's how she brought, you know, came into our show. We knew she was a really fantastic comedic voice. And although our show is like really dark and heavy, we like to have comedy in it as we can. So bringing her in was really wonderful. And after that project ended up getting passed on, Christy came back into the room, and we've been working for the last year on a draft. We're still not done with it. It's 12 episodes this time. There's even more characters. So we're getting there. We're not there yet, but we're almost there.
I'm curious what sort of draws you, like, what sustains you over the course of spending a year with these scripts? Is it like world building? Is it sort of having a bunch of diverse character arcs that you can play with? Like, what was the prompting to take it from sort of short microfictions, where, I mean, it could have lived forever, to a serialized audio drama?
Functionally, we just really wanted to make one. I mean, we loved everything we were hearing from the shows that we were making, and we knew, just like, you know, my talent as a writer and my brother's talent as an engineer and a composer, like, it just made sense for us to move in that direction.
Too good to not.
I know.
It's, you know, working together has always been a big high point for us. We were in bands together for years. Like, that is not a thing we wanted to do anymore. So this felt like a natural progression from that.
Word.
So it was about finding the right idea, and also, you know, wanting to push ourselves to make something that was massive, not understanding the reality of that at the time. And, you know, if I could say this to myself then, I probably wouldn't have made it as big as we did. But because
of
context,
how many characters are we talking about here?
So we've got a cast of about 12 to 15 main characters.
Gulp.
And we, across our first season, we had a total of 50 voice actors.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And so, you know, and granted, the last like 10 or so of those, that's like a bunch of people together in a room that are doing crowd wallow for us. Not every one of those characters is an actual written part, but we do credit all of those people, because the show wouldn't be, you know, what it is without them. So
That's
so part
many
of the
people.
Reason why we spend so much time on these scripts, is because there's so many storylines. So like, my first draft of the second season just didn't have enough new characters. And so it was like the character dynamics that we were seeing were just a natural progression of what we had in season one, but it wasn't anything that felt really exciting or new. And then when we came into it on our second draft, it was like, okay, a couple characters that had been really, really major really got sidelined in favor of some other characters. And so it's about trying to find the balance of telling the best season arc possible, but also trying to divvy up the playtime for each of our characters in a way that makes sense, that we're not giving anybody the short end of the stick.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
How is casting for the, you know, the infamous, like, who's talking now factor?
So that was,
and I guess just to spell that out a little bit more.
It took me a moment to get it right.
No, I see what you're saying.
So as somebody who's created audio drama, we've had to like deal with the problem of like, who is talking? And in Wolf 359, as I was playing two characters, we solved that with thick accent. And like, you know, there are other sort of like, you know, we put a computer filter on the AI system and, you know, sort of made it coming out of a speaker. So it's clearly not the other female voice in the show. But that's just four characters, like 15 core.
It was really tough. And I'm biased because I know them and I worked with them. And so I can listen to it and track it without issue. I can't say that we necessarily did it perfectly, because I think there are people that listen to it and listen to it more casually than I have, because I've listened to every draft of it 1,000 times.
Of course.
Probably do get lost. And, you know, that's the nature of the beast that we're in. But we really relied on chemistry reads and paying attention to how characters that were going to spend the most time together across the season sounded together as we were making our decisions. So for like, for instance, for two of our characters, we really liked two actors for either role. We really, really did. They were both wonderful. Their auditions for each were great. And it was about, okay, we know the two characters that they're going to spend the most time with. Who do they sound the most like? And it was like, our original instinct was putting the more soprano voices and the more bass voices together. And it was like, that's not going to work.
No.
So we switched them. And it was, you know, it was a hard decision to make. You know, we're going through the same thing now. We're casting season two now. And one thing that I really loved about doing it was that, you know, as we were doing the first season, I didn't have the connection to the audio drama community that I do now. And so we worked with a lot of New York theater actors and a lot of upstate New York theater actors, because that's where we produced. We produced in Syracuse, New York. And so we worked with a theater production company that works up there to do a lot of our casting calls. And so that got a lot of voices that no one had heard before. And we got a lot of like age diversity, which was really great. Like, we definitely had some older actors, which is something I'm really proud of. And that really like definitely helps with the timbre of someone's voice. Like when they clearly have age on it, like I'm not saying that a 20-year-old can't play, you know, a 50 or 60-year-old, of course they can. But when you get a real 50 or 60-year-old, you hear it. And so that is something that's really important to us.
That was always what bummed me out the most about the student films in our film program, was when like somebody cast a 20-year-old to play a middle-aged human. And it's just like, I love you. I don't buy this.
No. It makes it so much harder to suspend disbelief.
To go back to something that you said a couple of minutes ago, you talked a little bit about it being a show that contains both kind of moments of very intense darkness, but also sort of these moments of levity and humor. How do you guys approach that? Can you talk a little bit about kind of balancing that out and how you think about it?
So it's about trying to figure out what characters exist mostly as our comedic lens and fodder, and the characters that we want to tell really deeply, you know, traumatic is the first word that's coming to my mind, because we do explore a lot of PTSD and trauma for a lot of our characters, both, you know, generational and immediate. And so it's about kind of figuring out, you know, which of those characters make sense and which characters make sense towing the line. Like, speaking of, you know, Josh Rubino, who I mentioned earlier, he plays a character called Captain Root. And Captain Root is a character who can be incredibly cold and evil when dealing with anyone that's beneath him. And so you can feel like a real sense of fear. And the way that Josh plays the character is just so wonderfully. But then when you see that same character interacting with Wanda, who is this, really, she's a woman who has never been told in her entire life. So even though she's in her 30s, she still behaves exactly like a 12-year-old.
Right.
And interacts with everyone that comes around her in that way. And so with both of those characters, you can find these wonderful middle grounds of like, even when they're in their darkest moments, they can be really goofy and bring a lot of levity. Like, one of my favorite scenes to produce and episodes to produce is in the middle, I want to say it's episode 6, where you're spending a day with Wanda as she's just like presiding over these court cases. And, you know, she's like sentencing people to death for the most trivial things because she just wants to get out of there and eat a sandwich and not have to deal with people anymore.
We've all been there.
Exactly. So it's just about finding that balance and figuring out which characters make sense in which places, while also not writing off the fact that like anybody can find humor, obviously.
Brilliant. So where in the show are you now? Like, are you producing now? Are you writing now? Are
so we're in the middle of casting.
But we're also
more characters.
We've got 10 more named characters that
my
we've cast.
God.
And a lot more than that that are not in the main casting because they're too small to need, you know, we can get them with ADR in post-production. We recently came to the decision that we're going to split the season into two. Semantics, right. It's still going to be considered season two, but we're going to do 6-episode batches just because of how massive it's gotten.
We don't know anything about that.
We never did
exactly.
that.
Yeah. So we decided to go about it that route. It's also just like with the amount of characters that is, it's. We didn't pay everyone the first time, and we were really fortunate that we found people that just wanted to work with us and were excited about the project, but we don't want to do that again. You know, we want to respect everyone's time and we want to compensate them for that. And so the barrier to entry of crowdfunding for 6 episodes is going to be so much lower than 12.
Absolutely.
So we're at a place where we have a whole draft of the season. I'd say we're about 85% of the way there, and we're really close. It's just at a point where our finale is not quite there yet and probably should be 2 episodes, and looking at the rest of it and finding out, okay, where can we trim so that we can move things back to make room at the very end. So we're close and we're going to get there, but we're getting to a point of our planned production dates are coming up, and that's when we really needed to make the decision of like, okay, we're going to cut this in half.
Right.
We're going to focus on these first 6 because they're closer. They're closer to being ready. And then, you know, that will probably change our production style. You know, we really did like a Windfall summer camp vibe. We all posted awesome. Up at, you know, my brother and co-writer's house up in Syracuse. We set up in a spare bedroom. You know, we had free beer for everybody. We put everybody up for the week because of where things are landing and where people are in their lives. We might have to spread it out over more time. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, that's just the reality of it.
It sounds like a magical fucking time.
It was. We would love to do it again. And we'll probably do it in small, like weekend long bursts.
Right.
It's just like, you know, like Christy got a full-time job and doesn't have PTO yet. Like, it's just, right. you know, like things like that. Like,
we got to figure it out.
We just got to figure it out. But we're going to figure it out. Like, hearing that at first was a moment of like, holy shit, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then you take a day and you say, we're going to figure it out. Like, it's going to be fine. So we're getting there.
So unfortunately, I think that's all the time we have for today, Bob. But where can the people find you and find Windfall?
Absolutely. We're at Windfall Podcast on all of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and you can find us at Windfall wherever you find podcasts.
Thanks so much for coming by and sharing your story with everybody.
Absolutely. It's been a great time. Seriously. Thanks so much.
And thank you all for listening to this episode of No Bad Ideas. We'll be back next week at the same time with more terrible, terrible ideas.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.